Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Third hour on the show. Hour number three, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. What's going on? Coming from our wonderful studios here today on this Wednesday around the country, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today. Just check them online, RocketMortgageSquares.com. So, you know, Teague, as we wrap, as we circle back to how we started the show with Philip Rivers, you know, and there was some great stuff that we hit on. I actually believe the Colts expecting a very volatile quarterback market. A lot of good players could shake free. There's going to be some moving chairs. I view the Colts as, for me, the top destination. Good offense, good defense, good coach, winnable division for a couple of years here. Tiki likes the Saints, and obviously Sean Payton, hard to go against that. Good team as well. You know, but the one thing, as we kind of branch off to a different aspect of the Rivers stuff, and it's really unfortunate, and I don't know that it was always this way, but it's been like this way. It's been this way for quite some time. The way we look at quarterbacks who never won a championship, boy, oh boy, it's so unfair, and I get it. That is the measuring stick. You're a leader. You're the guy. Nothing starts until you say hike. I mean, you're making the most money. You're taking the bullets when you lose, getting all the praise when you win, blah, blah, blah. But it is just not consistent. You want to tell me about basketball? All right, that's fair. But baseball, you get a wide array of players who never won that get the benefit of the doubt. Ernie Banks is revered, not harpooned for not winning, let alone never playing a postseason inning. It's bothersome, but it is the way of the world. So his legacy is a bit of a complicated one, T.
Yeah, it is. But I don't. I think you only bring up this card. He didn't play well in the postseason, which is not actually that true. He got the one AFC championship game and he lost to the Patriots. Not like he lost to, some team that didn't belong there and was making a great run. Right. And that was the Patriots that were, that was the undefeated Patriots, I believe. I think it was. I think it was 07. I'm pretty sure it was that 07 Patriots team that ended up losing to the Giants.
07 or 08.
I can't remember what year it was. It might be 08. I can't remember now. But
Either way, they were in the wheelhouse of being a dominant team.
Exactly. It wasn't like the Tom Brady just started, Patriots.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like the established Patriots who were one of the dominant teams
for sure.
In football.
Yeah.
And they lost by, I think it was 21-12 or something like that was the final score. So, I mean, I think when you look at Philip Rivers relative to the other guys of this era, you have to realize in his lack of championships, you have to realize who he was playing against. And in the AFC, it was two like elite players, Peyton Manning and obviously Tom Brady with the New England Patriots. And so there is.
But the division was pretty weak. In spurts, Raiders were down for a good part of the century.
But it wasn't. But for the Chargers, it wasn't about underachieving in the division.
Mm-hmm.
It was underachieving once you got to the postseason. That was really the fault there.
And
You know, I think when we try to compare him to his peers, we will bring up the lack of a championship. But when we compare him over history, we'll look at his, you know, his accomplishments and his longevity and consistency and durability and his, like, all those intangibles, and we'll revere it, especially if he gets into the Hall of Fame, which I think is going to happen. It's just a matter of when he gets in the Hall of Fame, because
absolutely,
the stats, stats and the, you know, the championships, those are argument winners. Yep. But in order to understand the worth of a guy, it's the eye test. And I think there will be enough people who saw and played against Phillip Rivers to say, yeah, that dude was the man, and he deserves respect, even if, you know, he doesn't have the accolades of some of the other guys who were in this, you know, these last 15, 20 years.
Yep. Let me put it this way. There was, you know, a good chunk of years where, and again, it was a very different way of consuming the game. This was, what was the first year of the Red Zone? I think they just celebrated their 10th year. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I think I remember Hanson, like, some sort of tribute.
I'm almost positive that you're right.
10 sound about right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I know that when I lived in Manhattan, and this goes back, I was there, I guess, from 04 until 09, that's about a 5 or 6 year, 03 to 09, like 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the Red Zone in my apartment, and that's when I was doing local radio, and I would sit there, I'd watch the Jets and the Giants with my legal pad, and I'm still an old school legal pad kind of guy, but I would literally, when you were playing, I would say, I would write, you know, 1st and 10. All right, you know, left side, Tiki, 5-yard gain, 2nd. I would jot every single play so that when I'm on the air the next day, I have all the ammo, because you're getting all the particulars calls and you want to know what's going on. And I always remember that when I got the out-of-market treat, when it was Phillip Rivers, I always really appreciated getting to watch Phillip Rivers play. Like, I viewed it as, all right, I'm getting to watch one of the stars of the NFL at the most glamorous position.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I judge it. And then eventually the Red Zone came, and then eventually fantasy football. I mean, well, certainly when I was living there, it was fantasy football was prevalent. But for a big chunk, Phillip Rivers was maybe not number one or number two on fantasy wish list, but certainly a priority for a lot of fantasy owners. I'm sure he won a few of you a few bucks over the years, or a trophy or some bragging rights. Like, to me, it is the height of short-sightedness to try to reposition or readjust a great career, a statistically great career, a career of amazing durability. And I'll take it a step further. You look at, let's just juxtapose the situations for a moment. Let's say if Eli went to San Diego and Phillip Rivers comes here.
Yeah.
Now, you can never prove this, but based on the way clutch throws aside, and he made a few of them, and they're all-time throws. We know that from Eli. But the reason, for the most part, the Giants won those two championships is because of great defense and great coaching. And two reasons why the Chargers never won championships is because they didn't necessarily have great coaching when it mattered, and they didn't have great defense when it mattered.
Yeah.
If Eli's in San Diego, you might say Eli is chipless. If Phillip Rivers is in New York, he might have more than two, quite frankly.
It's interesting because this is just local lore. I don't know the actualities of this. Back in 2004 when Ernie Corsi was the general manager, but if that deal had fallen through, at least this is just what I've read and talked to people about it, the deal for Eli had fallen through. So let's remember how this played out. The San Diego Chargers at the time, San Diego's not misstating them, they were the San Diego Chargers. Drafted Eli.
San Diego Super Chargers. Exactly. Diego Super Chargers.
The Chargers drafted Eli, number one overall, and Eli and Mannings, meaning Archie, said, we're not going to play through there. And so there was a deal that frantically had to be worked out between a team that was farther down the list, and that was the New York Giants. I think they were four, maybe three or four. I think it was four.
Four
at that time. So at four, if they hadn't worked out a deal to draft Phillip Rivers and then trade with Eli, the Giants were going to take Ben Roethlisberger. That's what I've come to understand.
Huh.
And so what would have happened then, you know, just to add, you know, some more twist to the plot that you're talking about, what if Phillip Rivers is in Pittsburgh, as opposed to...
To me, that wouldn't have been a natural fit for whatever reason.
I don't know.
I think Ben would have been more natural in New York than Rivers in Pittsburgh.
But think about the characteristics of Phillip Rivers.
He is tough. So
he's tough as hell. I mean, he goes out and he works every day. He's, you know, a God-fearing man, as we all know. Yep. And he doesn't cuss. And he grinds, man. And he talks trash. I mean, he actually kind of feels exactly like Pittsburgh, just not gritty. He's not gritty. He feels more polished, but his it feels like in his soul he is gritty. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I do know what you mean.
I think if all things had stayed as they were supposed to be drafted, meaning Eli number one to San Diego, the Giants take Big Ben, and Phillip Rivers ends up getting drafted to the Steelers, I think they all still have pretty successful careers. I really do. Because at the end of the day, it's on the individual. You know, Eli is NFL like royalty. Like, he had no choice but to keep grinding through it until he figured it out, and he did. Mm-hmm. Big Ben had his issues in New York. They probably would have been exacerbated. Maybe Big Ben would have been the one, if all things being the same, like all the things that happened, like the off-field stuff, etc. If that was in New York, I'm not sure he survives it as easily as he did in Pittsburgh.
I think that's probably fair.
You know what I mean?
I do.
But I think that Phillip Rivers actually would have been okay in Pittsburgh. I really do.
You know, it's funny because when I initially resisted that, it's not about a toughness. It's probably because I have basically 20 years of watching him drop back with a short sleeve, with no sleeves on, and sun behind him.
I hear you saying.
Seared in my mind. But I am selling him short because – the adaptability or the toughness is transferable.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, all three of those quarterbacks, and your point is well taken about, you know, Ben in the New York market, you know, with more options to get in trouble, mm-hmm. the way we would have reacted maybe much more viscerally, and it would have been a longer story after what happened,
yep.
what happened. You know, maybe it would have been a bit of a different script for Big Ben, but you know, from a football point of view, Giant fans would have loved this guy.
Oh, yeah.
They would have loved him.
Oh, yeah.
And,
he's like Phil Sims, man. He was just like big, burly, strong.
Yeah, only 2 inches taller. And yeah. Phil's a big, thick, as you know, strong dude. Big Ben's 2 inches taller and probably 25, 30 pounds, maybe more heavier.
Yep.
You know, I those three are intertwined forever. I can't, you know, what does this really mean? It means nothing when I say this, but... Like, if I were to line up those three players on their absolute best days, right?
Mm-hmm.
The apex of wherever their physical prime was, 28, 29, 27, 31, whatever you think it is. And under this ridiculously fictitious sports radio TV situation, they had basically like the same head coach, the same old line, and the same teammates. The order that I would pick Phillip Rivers number one.
Phillip, Ben, and Eli.
And I would pick Big Ben number two, and I would pick – I don't want to say Eli last because those two guys in front of him are Hall of Famers, but literally of the three it would be last, but it's not meant to be disrespectful. I just think that those other two, I just think they had a little more talent.
Yeah.
Just pure natural talent that just dripped that off their body, off their right arm.
Yeah, I mean,
I always thought.
You can't argue that, and it's not a knock on Eli because he was uber successful, but – those guys, they were different. They were, and especially Phillip Rivers, he was a different breed, man. And, you know, I always remember thinking about, like, how is this guy going to be successful in the NFL with that jacked up throwing motion? It didn't look smooth. It almost looked like he was in pain. You know, think about a baseball player that has like a pinched nerve or an impinged whatever in his shoulder and his rotator cuff, whatever it may be. And he's got to like struggle to throw the ball. And, you know, it sometimes it's erratic. He threw it like that. And it was consistently accurate over the course of his career, especially with deep balls. And got, you know, later on in his career, the last couple of years in San Diego before they moved to L.A., that deep ball was pretty ugly and inaccurate because his arm strength had faded a little bit.
Like...
Yeah, exactly. It kind of just floated up there. It was like a punt that goes, you know, butt first. As opposed to turning over, kind of just like sits up there.
Yeah, yeah.
But
or like a banana ball off the tee.
That's right. But for the most part, it's, I mean, he was great throwing a ball downfield.
Yes, he was.
And it just looked like, oh, that's an ugly throw. Oh, wait, that's a 60-yard touchdown.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you know, kudos to Phillip Rivers, man. He just He grinded, and you can't not respect him. You have to respect what he
100%.
Did. 100%. Despite the fact that he's left out of the, you know, greatest of all time conversation because of his lack of championships. He was an elite player, and he was tough as nails, and his teammates absolutely loved him. So, and so did his opponents. Did you see the J.J. Watt story?
I don't think I saw that one, though.
So J.J. Watt was telling the story. I think he posted it on Instagram or Twitter or whatever it was, where he was remembering this moment when the Houston Texans were about to blitz the Chargers, and Phillip Rivers gets up to the line of scrimmage and he tells the other linebacker, he's like, hey, you're in the wrong spot. So he's talking to the defense.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you're in the wrong spot, because he knew what blitz they were going to run. Mm-hmm. And this young linebacker was in the wrong spot. J.J. Watt was hysterical. Just laughing at him because he was right.
Wow.
Like, he's like, he knew what we were going to do before we did it.
Wow.
Hey, dude, you're in the wrong spot. Said, hut, I'm going to beat you anyways.
That's great. I didn't know that one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, go check out J.J. Watt. It was cool.
Do you think a player with that arm slot, like, imagine if Justin Fields threw a ball like that, or Zach Wilson or Trevor, like, the level of
scrutiny
and investigation, it would be unbearable.
I agreed.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know if he gets – I mean, he probably still has a similar – He would have to work for the opportunity, but maybe not, because he sat behind Drew Brees for 2 years. It's not like he came in and started right away.
But so, he was still a top five pick. And,
true,
you know,
but I'm saying, but I mean, this would he have been a top five pick now? I don't know. It's hard to say, because it would have got dissected so badly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, back then you didn't really think about it. It's like, does he complete the ball? Does he throw a good ball? Does he got strong? You know, does he look the part? Yeah. Is he a leader? Yeah. Let's draft him. You know, we'll fix all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they want you perfect coming out of school. And that's just, it's unfair.
Yeah. It's almost, yeah. You know, I agree with that. It's almost, it's just a great transition too. So much respect. He, you know, you're reading his quotes. He just can't wait to go and coach high school football.
I mean, yeah.
How do you not love that?
Yeah.
The guy loves football. He's got all the money in the world. He doesn't have to do a damn thing the rest of his life. And he's getting ready to grind and go and probably not get a penny to do it.
Yeah.
Go and coach high school football. That is fantastic. Have a great retirement. Hell of a player. I'm going to miss watching him. Hey, he won a lot of people, a lot of money, hitting a lot of overs over the year. Let me put it that way. Some of those games, I mean.
That's a good point.
He was putting points up.
That's a good point.
Every week he's bringing 30 to the top. I don't know what the defense was giving up, but he was doing his share. And if the over-under is, you know, 52 or 53, we're in that neighborhood, and the Chargers are putting up a 30 spot. You're more than halfway home. You have a chance to collect. So Rivers respected for pretty much every football reason, no doubt. Great career. All right, Teek, let's get to Darren Waller. He's going to join us coming up next. Outstanding tight end for the Raiders. So we spoke to Josh Norman, who's phenomenal. We had Josh the Bills on previous hour talking about the culture in Buffalo and what it's like up there in Buffalo, and you know how they're prepping for Patrick Mahomes versus maybe taking a look at Chad Henne on film. That's one lens. That's one prism. That's the intimate one. This one's a little different because Waller can give us certainly a sense of what the Raiders are trying to do to get to this point themselves, but also, you know, looking at Buffalo and looking at the Chiefs from a seat that's not as intimate like Josh. So we'll get a good scout report on this game, and we'll do that coming up next with the outstanding tight end for the Raiders, Teke and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So obviously, Phillip Rivers is a big part of the conversation today. We're expected to get our up next up this segment with Darren Waller for the Raiders. They're outstanding tight end. God, is he good. I would recommend everybody, because this impacts potentially, you know, at least the conversation we had, maybe 11, 12, 13 different fan bases. Teek and I started the show. You're going to want to get this on radio.com or Apple iTunes, youtube.com/Teek and Tierney. We'll get this up there for you. All the different options for the Colts, whether it's, you know, maybe giving the ball to Jacob Eason if he showed enough in practice, or, you know, try to get a stopgap like Ryan Fitzpatrick and maybe drafting somebody like Trey Lance if you view him as a project and not yet ready, or the Garoppolos or the Matt Ryans or the Staffords, or, you know, maybe make a move with Sam Darnold if the Jets either acquired Deshaun Watson or they draft Zach Wilson or Fields from Ohio State. And keep in mind, that is one thing that I didn't really harp on, that because I don't want to be too Darnold-centric, because I sometimes spend too much time on Sam for a guy who hasn't done much, even though I do think he could be good. That relationship is interesting because Frank Reich was with Joe Douglas in Philly. So you never know. So so many things could happen.
Yeah, it's a lot of things could happen. There's a ton of options for the Indianapolis Colts. Some of them are better than others. And again, all the quarterbacks that are free, Andy Dalton's going to be free. Would he be interesting, especially after – I mean, he stabilized a little bit what was happening in Dallas.
Yes, he did.
Won some games and looks. I mean, he was great in Cincinnati those early years. Him and A.J. Green were they were just amazing combination. And obviously, as he got older, things kind of faltered a little bit. And, you know, the coach turned over, the roster turned over. But he was still pretty good last year. And he's not old, per se. Mm-hmm. So there are options for this team, the Indianapolis Colts, because they feel really close. Right. And let's not, you know, make this about Phillip Rivers, you know, leaving them out in the lurch. I know some people will say that, but
they knew what they were signing. One year, 25 mil.
Exactly right. 1 year, 25 mil. He had, I mean, he literally already accepted a job to be a high school football coach down in Alabama, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He'd already accepted the job and they convinced him to come out. Give him one more shot, Phillip. He said, sure, okay, we'll see what happens. You know, I still feel good. But, you know, according to, you know, what you read internally over there at Indy, he battled injuries all season long. He was banged up and beat up and, you know, he just didn't want to deal with, you know, the grind any longer. And, yes, he had a good season. It wasn't elite, but he had a good season. Mm-hmm. The team is good around him. They got a great young runner in Jonathan Taylor, who they just drafted from Wisconsin. And you mentioned before the depth at that position, the Hines and Marlon Mack. Like, they have talent.
Yeah.
It's just
– Pittman's a good receiver.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end of the day – you got to really still love it, and you got to love that grind. And it's not – I'm talking about the mental. I'm talking about the physical grind of your body going through this another year. And he said enough's enough, and you tip his hat to him. It was only 1 year, but it was a pretty good 1 year in Indy.
You know, yeah, I would agree with that. And his last pass came up, you know, a couple of yards short on that throw. That was a hell of a – that was a very underrated playoff game, by the way.
Yeah.
That Titans-Bills game, like, I know Bills won't forget about this. Bills-Colts. I know Bills fans won't forget about this, but the that was a game that was very easily, you know, Bills could have been sent home very early and despondent, where they would just be getting over it now. Forget about getting ready for the AFC Championship game. The tears would just be drying up now. Mm-hmm. Like, they were very – a couple of calls, a couple of weird scenarios. I mean, final play, final drive was wild. That was a playoff game that – because it was the first game. It was actually the literal first playoff game. Super Wild Card Weekend. That was the first game on Saturday. It's kind of easy to – it gets lumped in with some other stuff that went down if you're not a fan of either of those teams specifically. But that was a quality game.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. They had a chance, but they were just not quite good enough, which is probably going to be the same next year.
No, I don't know if I agree with that.
I'm talking about from a quarterback standpoint.
Stafford.
Yes. I'm talking about if they leave everything as is. Right, don't go make any of these moves.
But they have to make them.
If they upgrade a quarterback, then it is. It's a different scenario.
You know they're making.
See Eason, their general manager, has even said that you know, Jacob Eason's just not ready yet.
Yep.
What was he? Fourth round pick.
Fourth round pick. Brissett's not the guy.
I mean, there's a reason they went and got Phillip Rivers. Even though Jacoby Brissett was intriguing and it was a good stopgap for a year and a half or 2 years, whatever he was there from New England, but they need to go get a guy who can be that guy for the next few years, because they're in their window. You know, you talk about these windows to compete and win championships. The Colts are in their window right now, both offensively and defensively.
Agreed. Which is why, and I know you didn't love the idea that I threw out. It's not my plan A, but it's a backup plan that could give you a nice little pop on the back end if you're right, and provided your scouting reports are accurate and you believe that Lance could be the player that some people – I don't know anything. I mean, I've seen highlights. You know, he played one game this year, didn't play particularly well. People rave about him. I'm not going to waste America's time telling you if I think Trey Lance – I have no idea. But I do know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is quality. And what I said to Teak, you know, if you can't get a Stafford, which would be ideal, I think Matt Ryan's staying with the Falcons. I don't think that relationship ends yet. But if you can't get Stafford, to me, the duo of Fitzpatrick, and again, Tiki doesn't love it like me, I get it.
Yeah.
But Fitzpatrick, if you're right on Lance, what that would do is eventually you hand it off to Lance. He's on year two, if he plays in year two, of a rookie deal, and now you can start playing all the paying all these other guys that you have to start paying because they're going to have to start paying some guys.
Yeah, I agree.
That just extends the window.
But I'm going to fall back on this philosophy that I am now going to talk about for forever until I'm proven wrong about this. Is your quarterback a Hall of Fame quarterback, or at least on the trajectory to be a Hall of Fame quarterback? If not, he's not winning you a Super Bowl, period, unless you have an elite defense. Now, this Colts defense is good. There's some good young pieces there. Obviously, we talk about Darius Leonard and I forget their other linebacker's name. He's 54. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's also really good. Buckner, who they got in the trade from the 49ers, he's good.
Yeah, very good.
They have a pretty good secondary.
Rhodes is out there. They picked him up for the Bikes.
So there's depth defensively, but even with all that said, they were still kind of just like, you know, 10-ish. You know, they need to be elite if they're going to win with a subpar quarterback, meaning a sub Hall of Fame quarterback. So to me, I think if you're the Colts and I'm Chris Ballard, their general manager, I'm looking at this from a very specific decision-making point in reference. Is this quarterback Hall of Fame trajectory or better? And if the answer is no, then I got to go find that guy because that's how you win Super Bowls. And if you're Indy and you're this close and you're in your window, you take every shot, man. You got to do it because the Colts are a team that they have the circumstances around them, meaning the division, as you mentioned before, the team, the coach. They have it all. Mm-hmm. They just need to find the quarterback.
Yeah. What do you think Ballard, like, you know, you devise a plan, and we do this with all aspects of our life. You know, you kind of, all right, best case, what you presume to occur, like as a reasonable result where it's not a stretch and you'd be happy with it. It's not a reach, but it's also something that you would be satisfied with. And then there's scenarios where, all right, if I have to deal with this, if the first two or three things don't work out, if you're Ballard, and you're devising your offseason plan for that position.
Yeah.
What is your number one most aggressive, most ambitious strategy? Like, what are you attacking right now?
To me, I'm calling up the Detroit Lions.
And what are you giving them?
And what do you want? I'm asking, what do you
want? I know you want Stafford. What do you want?
If you're Detroit, what does Detroit want? Detroit wants everything.
Detroit can't have anything.
I know.
He's not 25 years old like Deshaun Watson.
I know.
The Texans can ask for everything.
I'm trying to find their draft.
Well, they got 21st overall this year, which is a bit of an issue because if you want to trade them to,
you're not going to get a good draft haul for Stafford. So you're gonna have to give up, I think, a player too.
But I don't want players. I want to rebuild. If I'm a new coach, I want to rebuild with picks and low contract. You know, contracts that are first.
You're talking about if you're Detroit.
Yeah, pardon me. If I'm Detroit,
yeah,
I don't necessarily want players back. I let Darius Slay walk the year before. Didn't pay him the big money. You're starting to trim, and not that Matthew Stafford or Darius Slay is the fat. They're the exact opposite. But you're trimming the hefty contracts, the guys who haven't won, the guys that have been a part of the losing for a while, and I'm looking to reboot. I don't want players. I want picks.
Yeah,
I'll take a few guys maybe in year two that I find interesting, but I like that swap has got to be spearheaded by incredibly appealing draft equity. It's got to be.
I agree.
It has to be.
I think you're right.
Same with the Texans, and I don't know. I don't have the draft, the trade board in front of me, but I would think that. Just a guess. You tell me if you think I'm off with this. Like, whatever the Texans are going to, if they're going to ask for Deshaun Watson, I would say based on the age and based on the market of availability of a lot of players, not as good as Stafford, but still a lot of options, I would think that the Lions, a reasonable neighborhood would be to ask, I would say, maybe 40 to 50%, roughly half of what the Texans are asking for Deshaun Watson. Do you think that that's underselling, ambitious in the middle?
No, because he's established. I mean, he's great, and we know this. He just hasn't had good teams around him. So I don't think
he's also 7 years older, though.
True, but that doesn't mean the end is near. You know what I mean?
That's true. I agree with that.
Not in today's NFL. So
that's true.
I think
that
makes sense.
All right, let's get Axe update. We'll come back. We'll hit you with the blast, see what Axe got cooking up. Maybe take a peek at the NBA tonight. Kyrie expected to suit up, first dance with his buddies, Durant and James Harden. So we'll get to that. But first up, here's Axe update coming at you. right, we're going to get to the blast in a moment. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, putting the finishing touches on a heck of a show. It is time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day here, brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto's Part. O'Reilly Auto Part. Wow, that is a rough one to say for some reason. I've only said it a gajillion times over the years, but I couldn't say it today. Oh, well, what are you going to do? All right, Tiki, this one's a little basketball focus here about Kyrie. It comes from Kyle, and he is in New York. And Kyle wants to know, what do you guys think about the addition with Kyrie here? Will his absence wind up helping or hurting the team this year? So will his absence, the way Kyle frames it, we know Kyrie's back tonight. Do you think the absence will end up helping or hurting the team this year?
I think it helps the team. As we talked to Joe Harris earlier in the about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago at this point, he said, look, it gives us as younger players a chance to put our stamp, get some playing time, and develop a little bit. And I think that's proven to be true. I think the chemistry between KD and James Harden has been exceptional, and Joe Harris has been no slouch either as that third scoring option. So with Kyrie back, you're just deep with scorers, and that can do nothing but help you.
Yeah, that was a good conversation with Joe. Granted, that was before all this went down, so maybe things would have changed. Maybe not, but yeah, I mean, the Nets are going to drop 140 on you, and you're going to have to stop them. Simple as that. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. You know, in terms of tonight, like the immediate reaction, he'll be a little rusty. They'll be a little rusty together, and that's where I think they'd be better served. Not that I'm not rooting for Steve Nash, but if they had a coach with more experience, even though D'Antoni's there, I get that, and he'll be able to, you know, and has already helped with easing Harden into it because he knows the skill set as well as anybody. Durant's an easy superstar to play with, much like LeBron. Not quite LeBron-like in terms of creating for others, but easy to play with. The extra brick, the final brick here is Kyrie. The first two bricks, I think, will go in seamlessly. I think the last bricks might require just a little more, you know, a little more repositioning, might have a little jagged edge that you're going to have to, you know, scrub down at some point. But if things go awry, if things go the way they should, then that's going to be one beautiful wall when this is all built. If this actually comes to fruition. And Kyrie's here to stay. And, you know, I don't know. Just the way I looked at his body language, I know you didn't really care about it. I saw a guy who looked dejected. And maybe he was dejected because he was fulfilling a remedial requirement that he wanted no business. I don't know. But he didn't strike me as incredibly happy. I hope he finds peace, and I hope he balls out. And if he does, they're going to be tough to stop, that's for sure.
Agreed.
But it begins tonight, though, Teak, as we know. You ready for the blast? See what we got?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right. In his introductory press conference, new Broncos GM George Payton wouldn't set a timetable on when Denver could start to contend, actually, here, Tiki.
I just think they've drafted well in the last couple of years. They have some good young players to build around. Now, whether how long it takes, I don't know. We have to do our part. But I do think there's some pieces in place, and it's a young football team. But they do have some young pieces in place, a healthy cap. So they have a lot of reasons to be optimistic.
Okay, so how far away do we think the Broncos are from contending? And by the way, did he say they?
Yeah, he said they because he wasn't there when it was happening. He's not claiming it.
But at the end, he said, okay, I got it. Yeah. At the end, he could have dropped the we in there.
They got to use their draft equity very smartly. A lot of people have them taking a quarterback, but I think if you listen to John Elway, who was acting GM, yep, president of football operations, he's now no longer the general manager. They said they were going to run it back with Drew Locke. And if that's the case, then they can upgrade defensively, even though it's hard to say you need an upgrade from Von Miller. But Von Miller, as it's a confusing situation. He's being investigated for some sort of something out in Denver right now. He's 32 years old. He is coming off a major injury to his ankle, and he's a free agent after this upcoming season. So as great as Bradley Chubb may be, you're going to need another rush in. So there's options in this draft. So I think it's going to depend on what happens draft-wise, how soon they can contend. I'm going to say I think in 2 years they'll be ready. Next year, if Drew Lock plays better, they could surprise us.
They've got receivers, although Judy had a horrendous end to the season. Remember that? He had some monster drops. You did that game, right?
No, I did the game before.
Oh, gotcha. That's right.
We obviously watched that game.
That's right.
A couple of them weren't really his fault. I mean, they were put on as drops. I mean, it was five drops. But two of the passes, I wouldn't say, are easy catches. Okay. that makes sense. So it's probably like three drops, maybe four.
Which is probably three too many for a young man who's supposed to be great. Very well might be, but he had a rough day. And he didn't have a great season. You know, you've had other injuries with their star wide receiver, who they will get back, which is a good thing. Listen, the answer to this, we can dress this up as much as we want. If it's Drew Lock, great. Then maybe you're right. Maybe it's 2 years. Maybe it's a year. If it's not Drew Lock, then, I mean, it could be 10 years. Because if you don't have a quarterback, if you asked me this question 10 years ago about the Jets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could have said 2 years, but they never found the quarterback over the course of 10 years. So it's 10 years. You really don't know. So they got to find a quarterback. And unless they do that, I can't possibly say with any confidence it's a year or two. I don't know if Lock is there. I know he's got a good arm. That's all I know. So right now they are not in the relevant portion of the pool in terms of contenders until they actually are. All right, yesterday Titans wideout A.J. Brown had surgery on both of his knees. That's not good. Brown hurt his left knee in training camp and his right one in week one. He plowed through it. He played 14 games, put up big numbers, over 1,000-yard receiving, and a lot of touchdowns too. Where would we rank Brown amongst receivers right now? You know, this is, I like him a lot. I mean, am I going to say that he's top five? No. Am I going to say that he's top 10? He does find the end zone a lot, and there was only a handful of guys, and a couple of whom were tight ends, who had double-digit touchdowns, and he was, I think he had 10 or 11. I know he had at least 10, maybe 11. I think that Brown is probably in that, I'm going to say, maybe 8 to 12 or 13-ish range, but now you got to keep this in mind. You know, all right, so Jefferson, this, you know, he's going to, if this wasn't a mirage, and it's not, he's going to be on this list forever. Somebody like McLaurin from Washington, I want to see him play with a real quarterback play. He might be better.
Yeah.
He's already, it's close. Let's say like 9 to 13. I'll put him in that range.
Yeah, I mean, statistically, he's more like around the 30 range.
But touchdowns. That, he finds the end zone.
Yeah, but that's the difference. I'm talking about yards and receptions.
Yeah.
A lot of that is because, I mean, the Tennessee Titans, they run the ball 80% of the time. So what can you do? It's like you can only judge a guy for the opportunities that he's been given, and for the most part he's been pretty solid as a reliable player. I'll probably say top 15. He's got to do it consistently in order for me to put him in the top 10, but I think he's got the potential to be there. That is, if these knee injuries aren't bad. They're probably just like little meniscus things and cleaning up, but just sounds like
both of them.
Surgeries on both knees. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Surgeries on both knees.
For speed guy.
Exactly. It could just be something minor, but you never know.
Yep. All right, Teague, former first-round pick Kevin Porter Jr. expected to be waived or dealt. He'll never play for the Cavs again. Mm-hmm. That was ugly. Had a real outburst in the locker room. They had moved his locker, and he lost his mind. Kobe Altman, the GM, had to come in and confront them and basically try to dial this thing down. I was reading about it last night more in depth. Not good. Hasn't played all season for personal reasons. So should a team take a chance on the former top high school recruit? Mm. That would be Kevin Porter Jr.
I mean, I would. He was, the 30th pick? So he's picked back of the draft, and there's some issues there, obviously. But maybe being in the right place with the right coach / mentor can help him. He's got talent. There's no question about that. But there's a... I think a growth or growing up that needs to happen, a maturity that just hasn't clicked in yet. That's a little troublesome, but you have to give guys like that a chance. Even if it's a two-way contract in the G League, you give him a shot and maybe he figures it out eventually.
I agree. Now, to accelerate that maturation curve, I would want him to be surrounded by some good vets. You know, I don't know if Phoenix is a great spot for him, but certainly Chris Paul's, that's the kind of mentor you want. You want a LeBron to put his, not that LeBron has time to mentor a kid who might be out of the league in a year. He's got enough things to worry about, getting another championship here and playing 35 minutes a night. But if you get him to the right franchise with a coach that's going to be hard, but understand maybe some deficiencies, some holes in his character that he's got to change, quite frankly. It's a low, monetary risk, yeah, for sure. And if you get him in the right locker room, I would absolutely take a chance on the kid. What's the worst thing you do? You cut him.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not giving up assets for him. They're going to cut him. They're going to waive him. You pick him up. You give him a shot. If not, whatever. All right, last night, a little Big East action. Villanova playing for the first time since December 23rd. Mm-hmm. And the third-rated Wildcats survived against Seton Hall, Kevin Willard's team, the Pirates, right in our neighborhood, Teague, by a deuce. Good game. That might be the best rivalry in the Big East, actually. It wasn't always that way, but the new Big East, that's a really good one. 76-74, Nova took it. Is it a competitive advantage to have missed so many games, or will it hurt Nova come March? I think that I can see it both ways. It's not like you're playing 82 games where rest is paramount. You're playing 30-something games in a non-pandemic year, 40-ish if you make that run to the championship game or the Final Four. But there are a few new pieces on that team. Jay Wright's missed time himself with COVID. He contracted the virus. So I think it's kind of a wash this year because other teams will be relatively well-rested because they've had a lot of cancellations and interruptions. I don't think it's a real positive. I don't think it's a real negative. I just think that Villanova is a really good program, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Your instincts are on point there, BT. But it's also because, I'm looking now, and I think this is the case. Most of their the guys that play a lot, yeah, they're upperclassmen,
and maybe
there's a couple sophomores on this team. So it's not like, God, we haven't played in a month. We don't really know what we're doing. We don't know how to play together.
There you go.
Right. So I and Jay Wright's a great coach. I think it's actually probably it's not helping them, but it's not detrimental. if I could straddle right in the middle,
that's what I did. Same answer
for
me.
It's the only way to look at it because veteran teams like this, they can get out and roll the ball on the court and they can do things right, especially if they're coached well. And we know that a Jay Wright coached team is going to be coached well.
Yep, he's one of the best, no doubt.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Also, a little note, John Lester signs a one-year deal with the Nats. I don't know if that changes a ton. A little rotational stability and depth, not a bad thing. But, he's obviously diminished greatly at this point. But a respected vet, he'll bring that to the team. So we didn't get to that, but that was on there.
It's an interesting, because we're looking at this Villanova conversation we just had. Gonzaga's played 14 games, Baylor's played 13. Both of them are undefeated. Villanova's third right now in the rankings. They played 10 games. They haven't played.
Yeah, they played some games. It's not like, right? I know
exactly.
What you mean.
It's like they haven't played in 3.5 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah,
but it's not like they've played 4 games.
No, you know not I mean? At all. Like not at all.
They've actually they got a lot.
They're not the Ohio State Buckeyes basketball.
That's exactly right. They're not that far behind. And they're not going to be able to make up some of those missed games, but I don't think it's hurting them.
Now, if you ask me, is this like a vintage power Villanova team? My answer would be no.
Agreed.
But not a team I want to see on my bracket because, as you said, incredibly well coached and a lot of vets that have won. Teague, have a great Wednesday night, buddy. I'll see you tomorrow.
You too, brother.
Nice. Looking forward to it. Everybody enjoy your evening. We'll catch you tomorrow. Safe, sensible, and sane. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.